ready for me, Barb? Good time?
I would say we're not close. I've just been.
Yeah, we did have a meeting.
Okay.
In the previous place. We literally did have a meeting.
Okay.
What do you think?
I saw that.
We did have a meeting.
So you don't have to do it all by yourself?
The white cars.
Yeah, the historical looks fine.
See, last time we were not here, we didn't get a car. We just stayed on the island and kept us. A cab. Pay the cab, guys ride the bicycle. This time, we're going to wait. Because we want to go up. Yeah, we want to go up.
Is that okay?
See what's going on.
Yeah, that's fine. That's perfect. That's perfect. Let me just introduce them here.
Oh, let me go grab it.
Good morning.
Good morning.
One of my co-chairs. Yeah, I'm ready. I talk pretty loud. I don't know. Is that on? I don't think I need it. One of our co-chairs is sitting on Interstate 65. She thinks she'll be here in about 15, 20 more minutes, so we're going to start without her. And if we have a few partners who aren't quite here yet either, we'll welcome them when they arrive as well. I am going to run around the room and actually allow all of us to do a quick introduction, who you are, how long you've been where you are, and what it is you do where you are. And then we're going to welcome Lou Moneymaker to say a few words and thank him for letting us use his facility this morning. So let's start in the back of the room, if that's all right.
I'm Jimmy Trumbauer. I work for Southern Indiana Resource Solutions. I've been there for 7 years. I run
Welcome.
Barb Young, General Staff.
I'm going to use a worker out game. I'm Eric
Gisline with Brad Incorporated. Tony has been there a while, 30-some-odd years. I've only been there 2 years, and I do business development.
All right.
First of all, Simple Bible Enterprises. It's been with the company 9.5 years. Just taking a position sales. And I'm responsible, well, account manager. I'm responsible for part of the state.
I'm Janet Malazzo from Fox Foods, and I'm dying to go in the room because I've been at my job 4 years.
Oh, no way, Janet. That is not possible.
I'm John Morris with Sycamore Services. I've been working for the last 5 years. I've been a consultant for Sycamore. I'm attending the day on behalf of the manager of our work services, Jeff Wells.
Bill Roth with Carey Services, been for 5 years, director of sales and marketing.
Frank Langdon, Goodwill, Indianapolis, director of operations. 30-plus years.
Todd Kaser, ADEC Industries. I'm product administrator. Been there for my position less than a year. Still learning.
I'm Jennifer
Willis.
I'm James Developmental, and I am the sales manager there. And there since March.
Okay, welcome.
Chris Sorensen, James Developmental Services. Been there a year, and I'm vice president of operations.
Welcome.
Janet Smith, Director of Adult Services at Janet's Developmental Services. I've been there for 4 years.
All right.
Jim Waldman, I'm with Easter Seals ARC. I'm the Director of Manufacturing and Business Development. I've been there about 7 weeks. So before that, I was always in the for-profit industry in manufacturing. So that was my first introduction to the nonprofit.
Welcome.
Cassandra Flanagan, these resources are purchasing from state use of the agencies. Cheers.
I'm Jane Hobson with Blue River Services. I've been with Blue River for 13 years and I'm the district's director.
My name is John Moore. I'm with Bonavista Industries in Kokomo. I've been with Bonavista for 10 months. Previous to that, it was 30 years with General Motors. And I'm the project manager for industrial element.
I'm Bill Stetzel with Noble, Indiana. I've been there 4 years. I've been the manager of work crews for 4 weeks.
Danny Bray, Noble, Indiana, director of industries.
How long?
3 years.
Okay.
I'm Jason Kellums. I'll be the guy talking about how to get lean in this. I'm with Enzo Arc in Southern Indiana. I've been there 2 years, and then I work in the industries, operations side, the business development, and work services.
right, and I think we have, Tom, you didn't get to say hello?
Yeah, I'm Tom Boyd, Boswell. I've been here for 3.5 years, and I do sales and a little bit of everything. Preston just recently came on, so we're splitting the sales.
Nice, nice. And Christian?
I'm Christian Campbell. I've been our director of sales. I've been there about 8 months.
All right, and we have one more late joiner who would like to say hello. Introduce yourself.
Yes, I'm Raina Shelton with Hopewell Center, and I've been with Hopewell for about 20 years. I've been over the industrial division for about 10.
Great. And my name's Loretta Mottram. I'm our Senior Director of Business Development at Pathfinder Services. I've been there for about 8 years. And I too came from the for-profit sector, so sales and marketing, I know. The world of not-profit, I'm still learning. But the commercial sector, you know, runs just like it does on either side of the highway. So that's kind of nice. See a lot of new faces today. That's wonderful. Welcome to all of you. Thanks to those who have been around a while and you're sharing your expertise, and to those that are new and absorbing. We're happy to answer any questions, and the point of today's session is to network and learn. So with that, is Lou available to do a quick introduction? Oh, I think I see him. There he comes. Lou's the CEO here at Bosma Industries, and would love to just welcome you for a couple short minutes this morning. So, yeah, it's all right. And with that, we have Lou. Perfect timing, Lou.
Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
Sorry I was running a little bit late. We had a little contract issue that came up that had to be taken care of. So, well, I just wanted to come in today to welcome everybody and to Bosma. And hope you have a great day. Any of you, if you have time and you haven't been here sometime during your stay, if you want to take a tour, let Tom know and we'll make an arrangement for somebody to take you around if you'd like to do that. I know this is important work that goes on. Like the rest of you, we're very interested in the state use program and developing more business that will in turn create employment opportunities for people who are disabled. So do good work, do hard work, and hopefully the outcome of that will be we'll hire more people in the future. So anybody have any questions about anything that you'd like for me to answer as it relates to Bosma and so forth? Well, I'm going to sit in for a little while and see how the meeting goes. So thanks for coming, and we're happy to have you here. Have a great day.
Thanks, Lynn. Okay. I think at this point we are going to transition into our next presentation. And I think if we were to ask the question, how many of you feel like you've got plenty of time at the end of every day to add 7, 8, 10, 15 more things to your list, you'd probably put your hands down or maybe step behind the person in front of you. I think the reality is there's just not enough time to get it all done. And if we get it all done, sometimes the quality of what we get done may not be what we're proud of. And so I think during this next presentation, we're going to learn a little bit about sustainability and the whole process improvement, how to make sure we're getting where we need to be. And I'm very pleased to introduce a young man who's had the opportunity to be in our industry for a couple of years. And he's been working as our VP of Operations and Business Development for Evansville ARC. But he brings with him about 20 years experience in the automotive industry. And so we're going to learn a little bit today about how we might be able to mirror some of the techniques in regards to lean and process management that might be valuable to us in our sector of the world. So with that, please welcome, assist me in welcoming Jason. Thanks.
First of all, we're starting off very great because she said young man. I just keep cutting my hair shorter to go with the baldness, but thank you very much. I really appreciate the opportunity to come here to speak. She mentioned that I have a background in automotive, and I heard automotive there also. So what I put together today is about a summation of a week's long training into about an hour's worth of discussion, incorporating the lean terms that you've heard before, like value stream mapping, Toyota production system, Nissan production way, some of the items that we use when I was a supplier for GM and Ford and the 8D processes and all that. But I wanted to get it to a term. I'll first start off, I am not a lean expert. I'm just a student of lean. So what I've learned, and I'll try to persuade you to understand what I'm talking about. But to get started, the first item here, and I'm going to deviate away from this. So I got a pretty loud voice. If you can't hear me, I'll speak louder. But the topic, it says, the basics of lean production system is the absolute elimination of waste. And waste is a big term, and that's why it's capitalized on what you see there. And we'll discuss that as we go through. There are different segments of waste I'll talk about and help you understand what that means. Waste does not mean trash, per se. The concept of waste, and we'll talk about that a little more as we go through. I don't know where.
I think that way.
All right, that's it. Everybody get their.
It's turned on and it's still not working. There's an on switch on the side.
It was stuck in the middle. Let's try that again. Hey, there we go.
All
right. So methodology is what I'm not going to read word for word here, but I'm going to talk about the concepts. The first one is the primary focus of lean. Again, is to reduce weights of all types and begin culture change. And that last word, change, is what everybody hates. And as you identify waste and in your processes and your operations, it automatically incorporates change because you're going to be wanting to remove that. But change is the lives of people, especially those who have been doing their jobs for many time or a long time. Lean culture is one of problem solving instead of blame. It's continuous improvement as well as innovation, and then development of all of our people, everyone in the process. So a couple things that I'll point out here. Problem solving instead of blame, continuous improvement as well as innovation. So as you've identified waste, it's a stepping stone of where you move forward because you're not done. You'll never get to that point. And I listed this as problem solving instead of blame because in my 2 years at Evansville ARC, we actually started with organization and then problem solving. We didn't go through and say, we got to get rid of all this stuff. It's really terrible and all. We had to talk about what is the foundation of how to build forward. And we'll talk a little more about that as we go through. Every organization must address 3 points: the purpose, the process, and the people. And I don't know how to get rid of that, but you can follow along there. The purpose of what is the value that we offer to our customers in our order, in our system. The process through smoothly flowing value streams. Again, I'll refer to value a lot of time because what value are we offering to those customers? Design, make, and use, and then lastly, the people. How do we engage our people to move forward as we understand our system? Here's where we struggle. The majority of your companies, and you can probably relate to where you're currently at or where you've been at before, is in the purpose. It's not clearly defined. Really don't connect to where we have to go to the customer to get to their problems, to solve it, to make sure our processes work. Our process is not clearly specified. Maybe our work instructions are red, but we don't really do a follow-up. Maybe it's not as clear. Maybe our process for inspections aren't very clear. And then people, they're not engaged in optimizing the whole value stream. They're focused on their job and not just the whole picture of what we do for the customer. So lean management addresses the purpose of problem solving. Again, I refer to that several times. Identifying the family value streams. And what this means is, starting from the customer, working your way back to your process, what parts of those systems are important to the end user or the customer? What is important to them? And we make the value stream easier, or the value easier, and it makes the flow of the value easier to see so we can see where we're at, what do we identify? Because a lot of times you'll see everyone's together, we're working towards a goal, but it just seems like it ends up there. We just don't understand how it got there fully on paper or visualization. Point of this here is it's problem solving, assigning a leader to each value stream. So making the current condition of the entire process clear to everyone, like I mentioned earlier. Processes are better for a future state and takes responsibility for implementing those. And then makes the condition of the new or the current state clear for everyone. Now, I know I'm talking in general terms, and I'll get to a little more specifics as we go through, but this is the overview of what value means to a company, and in essence, to a lean management process. So, a real simple step of 5 things to do, how to go forward, and what you have to do to start. First is find a change agent. That means find somebody in the organization that's associated to that particular value stream or that process that's willing to take it on. Are they ready to take the charge and be your change agent for you? That's going to take what we've learned and move forward. And I'll talk about an example that we've done at Evansville ARC.
Next is find a sensei. It may not be somebody that works in their process. Maybe it's somebody that has experience about how to incorporate more fluid process flows, adding in the particular floor roller conveyor, something that helps them understand where we're going to go. And then C's are create the crisis. So if we don't have a crisis in that situation, let's go ahead and identify it and say, that's where we're going to go. And you challenge your change agent to take that charge. And then map out the current situation. And then we're going to get started on creating a new process. But how do lean leaders lead this process? So my example, and I don't have it in the presentation, is that one of our processes at MSRARC was dealing with grinding of plastic. We have a customer that we grind up some of their old plastic. We have a nice grinder, really nice when I got there, and it was a conveyor. When I got there, it was 8 hours of two people in a box throwing this onto a conveyor. 8 hours. Okay, it's a big Gaylord box, and we got real low. They had to teeter in there, and they almost fell in the box and all that. So my first was, oh my gosh, somebody's going to get hurt, right? That's what drew us in, okay? I assigned the change agent from there. Yeah, grabbed the team leader, and we started mapping it out, okay? We start saying, okay, what are the issues here? What are you waiting on? What's going on with these two people working on this process? Well, their backs complain and they throw about 50% of it on the floor because they miss, throw it in the air and it kind of makes it. And then when it gets low, they have to pick this big box up and dump it over. I was like, okay. And then we also identified, well, they have to wait on the forklift to bring another box. So it's really not a system that tells them when. So a lot of wait time. So we're writing all this down, and we'll talk about a little more of what waste is, but we found real quick there's five areas there of just waste. Wait time, we had double handling, right? We're throwing it in the air and into the floor, they end up scooping back up, go back in. So we're handling everything twice. So it was taking us roughly about 35 minutes to 40 minutes with two people to empty a Gaylord box onto this conveyor. So we put our heads together. Bottom line, after we mapped all this out, we said, well, what about those old floor rollers that are sitting over that corner that nobody uses? What about this table that actually dumps? It was actually a dump table that was in the building, but people just didn't know what to do with it because it was from some other project from back in the day. We incorporated all this, and over a month's time, we added in floor rollers on stilts, basically. They're about 18 inches off the ground. We can load up to 5 pallets or Gaylord on these rollers, and people can move it with basically 2 fingers. You can roll it around. We incorporated this dump table that actually dumps it onto the conveyor, and we invested, I think I bought 4 2x4s and a 4x8 sheet of plywood, roughly less than $200, and we went from a capacity of about 8,500 pounds a day with two people to a capacity of 22,000 pounds a day with one person. Took time, right? So I was the guy with 3 eyes because they were like, oh my God, what are you doing? This doesn't make sense. We stepped through it, right? We took it in phases and we educated and we moved everybody through the process to incorporate what we have to do. Disabled and not disabled, mixed in. And we taught, you know, what does this mean? Because now I don't have a back problem. I'm not going to worry about a reportable at the end of the month or a lost time injury. I don't have to worry about downtime waiting on a conveyor to be filled by a forklift because I can put 5 of them on there. And we set up a routine for the forklift drivers. And we were able to take that person and the key is when you're saying, it's not that you're looking to fire people, it's looking to take that person and move them to another area to work on more efficiencies as you move through. We took that person, moved them to another job, and we took that and rolled through. So I'll explain that a little deeper as we go through this, but that's the idea because I wasn't going to like, we got to make this thing a lot more efficient and make it lean. It was like, I've got a safety problem. And when I got into the safety problem, we broke it all down. We found out there's 4 other opportunities for us to go along. So take that for what it's worth. I'm a talker, so if I talk too fast or I blow it right over you, just raise your hand, I can go over it again. So my grandmother tells me I have to get to the gap, and I keep talking. So again, lean is a philosophy of production, which emphasizes providing value to the customer and eliminating waste. I'll keep talking about that. Defining lean, continue reducing waste in all areas and all forms. It's like we did. We kept going. We kept digging. There's more here. What is lean? It's an English phrase coined to summarize Japanese manufacturing. Basically, referring directly to the Toyota production system. I've had that beat into me over the years. Good thing, though, because they sign right here. It's got to go into the military. You sign up, you got to go through it. But there's a lot that I've learned through that. What does it mean to be lean? It is not possible to be lean. I said earlier, I'm a student of lean. I'm not a master lean person. It's only possible to work toward becoming lean, because you're going to continuously keep moving. If you think you're lean and you're done, you're not. Because the economy, the world, everything changes. People change. People get older. Younger people come in. Different ideas. Right? We can continue to move. Being lean would mean that there's a process in place that ensures that the ability to continue to improve people and business, it's already done. It's there forever. That's not the case. So it's kind of hard to see on there. You can see it in your paper, but what I've taken here is this is actually from the Toyota production system. This is the house of lean. And I took out the Japanese terms and put in the Americanized term for people to understand. But what this talks about is that the lean operating system is built on two pillars. This is just in time. And if you're familiar with Japanese terms, this is Jidoka, or automation with a human touch. We'll talk more about that in as we go. But what it is, it works towards levelized production. 5S, organization. I mentioned that earlier as we started. Organization, then we looked at problem solving, which is a visual management standardization, continuous cost reduction through elimination of waste, and then again, it's revealed through inconsistent or unexpected results. So I'm going to break this down a little further as we go through this, and we'll also talk about a simulation of the ideal environment. The two main pillars, just in time, process flow, the right parts needed, and the assembly, process and assembly, when you need it, the time they need it, and only the amount that you need. So that is a just-in-time. And we'll talk about what traditional manufacturing or operations look like. Automation with the human touch. The basis of that is built-in quality, and we'll talk about that a little more, but built-in quality is at the process, a person, or a system, the quality is built into that step. And we'll talk about how it doesn't advance forward. But traditionally, most companies have quality inspected in. Probably pretty standard for everybody. But you go to an area that they're inspecting. That means a secondary process, we're inspecting that to ensure that it's right. It's not at the actual step of the process. If you understand, it's in the secondary off afterthought. And that's, again, this refers to that waste concept. So if I add in a secondary or a third step for inspection, additional waste is not to the value of that customer. Because as you know, the process that you keep adding, your piece price for the salespeople in here, okay, we say we're going to make 2 cents per. Every person we keep adding, that 2 cents keeps getting closer to zero, right? And then it's like, oh, wow, how do we lose money? What's going on? We have no quality issues. We've got 700 people in here inspecting that in. So cost plus versus cost reduction. There are two approaches to profit. First being that the sales price, demand is higher than production. So what does that mean? It says we can increase our profit if we increase our piece price, right? The demand is there, the sales are there, the customer's on board, and they're like, yes, that's great. Okay, that's the best world ever. Not realistic. Not typically you can go back to a customer and say, hey, I want to increase my piece price by 50% because we really need it. And they're like, yeah, that sounds great. What's realistic for everybody is the other side, the cost reduction. How do we continue to reduce costs to stay competitive? Where demand is less than production, sales price is determined by the customers, right? And then where we have to continually look at where our profit is and what we have to do to reduce our costs in order to gain more profitability. This is where we started, and this is what if we do our internal lean reduction activities. This is where we want to go. This is just an optimization of what we can and cannot do. This is, would be great, but this is more reality. Okay? And like I mentioned earlier, if this is what you agreed upon on the piece price, and then internally in your operation you had to add additional processes, that closes into zero, right? And then we go back to that discussion, which is not the favorable discussion you have to have when you're going over your numbers, like how we're at zero and we have to run a lot of revenue. So how do we reduce costs? Eliminate waste, that equals money. And that term, you'll see, and you can continue to use that as we go forward. But so waste, any factor, man, machine, method, which does not contribute to the manufacturing process by adding value, anything. Extra movement, we'll talk about that stuff coming forward. The goal of lean is to eliminate any and all factors which raise costs without adding value. Example, when I talked about that inspection. 7 types of waste. So, first one being correction. Correction means what do we have to do to fix what we didn't do right the first time? Offline repair, something that can't go through the process. Every time you touch that again, it adds more non-value to that. Overproduction. That means we're going to produce 200 of them because we believe we're going to sell those here in the next couple weeks. So we're going to have 200 sitting on the corner and you're just going to pull all that stock. Every time you touch that product that you don't sell, it's cost. You're booking every time somebody touches that. Right? So if you don't sell it at the end of the month or end of the week or end of the day, you have excess inventory. What I found, and in a lot of the companies that I've worked with, is excess inventory. People feel comfortable when there's a lot of product available and they feel that they will not go down, will never shut down the customer. That's not good because your inventory costs are out of this world. Customer never goes down, they're happy, but then again, at the end of the month, they're like, how did we lose money when we brought in so much revenue? Oh, well, by the way, we've got $1 million of inventory sitting outside. Customer's happy, but CEOs aren't happy. Then you got to look at those numbers, right? Talked about motion. I gave you an example of that when we did with our conveyor situation where extra motion, extra white walk time adds up because that motion is you're not touching the product. You're actually, that's movement. You don't make any money unless you're touching the product, okay? Overprocessing, which is internal to the process. You'll have situations where WIP or work in process is in the process. You may have abundance of one particular component in that particular value stream. There's so much sitting here, that doesn't help, right? There's more inventory, more costs. People are touching it. Conveyance, how far do you have to move the product within the organization from a warehouse to a warehouse, to a process to a process? So if you have island processes, that's extra conveyance, which is actually waste, that you're not moving the product in a streamline as you go throughout. And then waiting. I mentioned that earlier, an example of our team members were standing and waiting for another box. So just start the clock. So if they stand there 5 minutes and you add that up over a week, add it up over a month, it all adds up to wow. You know, we paid somebody to stand here basically 20-hour week. So a last point, Lane, identify the waste and eliminating it. Again, you can't say that enough as we move through. So we talked about just in time, which is part of the lean house. Let's break that down. Building what is needed, when it's needed, and in the amount that's needed. That's the concept of just in time. So within the just-in-time is a kind of the blocks or the house that you build to break down just-in-time. But ideally, you go from a level sequential product that you're moving through in sequence. It has a continuous flow. There's no stopping. It doesn't go to an aisle process. There's not a wait. A pull system. We'll break that down next. Pull versus push, if you ever heard of those. We'll break that down too. Pull system is the ideal situation. Push, we'll talk about more, is not. And then tag time. So this is an automotive term, especially for those who have been automotive, but what tag time refers to is the total amount of time it takes from start to finish to get the end product. It may take you 5 minutes to make a widget. Cycle time, you've heard of cycle time before, cycle time or the cycle time to get to make the end widget. So there may be five different cycle times throughout here to make one tag. So what's the total amount? You have to understand that in order to be just in time, because if you don't know how long it takes you to make a piece, then you'll be off. Right? Because you're sitting in a process related to, that's your guideline as you move through. Again, leads to just-in-time. So I'm going to take you through a production analysis referring to the just-in-time concept as we move through. And I use widgets, because everybody understands widgets. The amount of widgets that can be sold, this is the optimization, this is what it would look like. You've got a levelized production, you got your average total time, you get your average for each model, you understand all this, and this is how product flows through. Inside of that, we want to avoid unlevel production, which making one type of widget at a time. This is the ultimate goal. We are not here yet as far as going to this forward, but this what you can take from this what is right and what you can do in your own process. What this says is that if you had four people, or three people in this case, and then I'm building the blue ones, you're building the black and the white, you're building the black and gray, that's not a levelized production. It's more simulated by person. So I'm on my own company, you're your own company, you're your own company. And what that leads to is what we talked about earlier. You know, the demand is not grouped or batched. We ended up with different levels of inventory. I may be building faster than you or slower than you. You may end up at the end of the day, you can't get enough product to send to the customer because they want it in a different category. So what this talks about is a levelized production. The ideal situation is that your people are actually have the ability to build the blue, the black and the white, and the black and gray in sequence. We set the process up to build in sequence because it eliminates that inventory. It eliminates that waste, and we're only building exactly what the customer wants. Again, it's a challenge in our environment. For those of you that that have an automotive background, you understand that they build different vehicles down the line, but this concept is with the ultimate goal. We're working towards this, right? We tested it out in different areas, but the ultimate goal is we build what the customer wants in sequence, and that way we pack exactly what they want, and they get what they want. I don't have a lot of inventory, I don't have a lot of waste as we move through. Again, in-line process, as it moves through, I can build whatever's given to me. If the blue one, I'm building the blue one. If the black and white, black and white. Black and gray, I can build it. I've been trained, cross-trained. I've got all the product flowing into me. I'm not walking from here to here. I'm not just building blue, and he's building black and white, and he's building black and gray. You know, that's the idea of where you go. And they're in small lots as they move through. Don't ask me where I got these pictures, because I don't remember. I believe I got them when I was in Thailand, but I'm not sure. So just-in-time avoids exactly what I was talking about, where there's not a lot of waste in movement, there's not a lot of waste in space. This keeps it to where we're in line and we're processed. The old concept that we talked about is that they're individualized islands, and you work in your own factor that way. So flow is in sequencing of value, creating activities resulting in seamless rhythm or minimal delays. Now what this says is that what is needed in the amounts needed, when it's needed. Now, number two is very important what it says. As close to one piece as possible. Take that for what it's worth, because that's what you have to work through. If you don't walk away from this saying, I got to get everything in one piece flow, right off the bat, you'll struggle, right? But you got to get as close to one piece as possible. How to minimize that inventory. We address this internally, currently in our process, is how much of that work in process or WIP inventory were we holding, right? How much was that? How much do we have at the end of the month? So we looked at, we had a WIP process inventory. We looked at that. At the end of the month, I had X amount overage. Right? I wasn't able to sell. So we backed up our numbers to get it in line as we're shipping out that inventory flows throughout the month. I don't have to book a lot of hours for labor with no sales. Okay? So we took that as we go through this. You know, get it to where we need it, and then when it's needed. Pull system. Okay? A pull system is as production or as product is moved through, we're pulling it to advance it forward. Pulling says, I need this, I'm going to build this, I need this, I'm going to build this. Reverse, which I'll show in a second, is the push system, where there's so much inventory behind me, and I've got to try to keep up. Right? I'm not really building towards what the customer wants. In this case, the customer's here, right? And you see how it works from raw material, and we're pulling it forward to get to what the customer demand is. What is needed in the amount, we pull that forward. What is needed, we pull that forward. We pull it forward and we get to the customer. That's the idea, right? So keeping that inventory low, keeping the process, simulation process, to the factory, controlled directly to the customer and the end user. We talked about this before, the traditional, this is what, I forgot touchscreen, warned me of that. So, traditional is the supplier pushes the foundry, pushes the machine, pushes the assembly, pushes the warehouse, pushes the customer. We're going to push it all through. And traditionally, in some of the larger companies, is that suppliers and or sales divisions, they meet some quotas, they have to push numbers through to meet their quotas. We found that a lot in some of the automotive side when you're building vehicles, is that sales committed to X amount of vehicles sold per month. And then we're like, we're pushing all this out, and then the days on hand inventory that's out waiting for customers exceeds that 60-day target. It may be 70 or 80. That's the push system. So we've got to back that up and go from a pull. Toyota works traditionally on the lean process, which is a pull system. They push more towards working directly off of customer orders. That's what generates orders for the plant, and plant builds based on that. It may be a 90-day window, but we're building straight out of that. So, again, in the lean process of a pull by the customer is just in reverse of what you see here. The customer is the last, we're actually getting the order from the customer, and it works back, and you flow that through to the customer. That's the idea. Again, ultimate goal. In our environment, you have to take that with an idea of where you should go and move forward. Advantages of just-in-time, minimize lead times, minimize the cost, exposes hidden problems. Okay, exposes hidden problems. In my example of our inventory overage that we had in certain areas, we didn't recognize that there was a problem because, again, we had so much inventory, customers were taken care of, nobody's never got a phone call, where life is good. End of the month, we're doing the analysis on the numbers, like, where'd we lose? All right, so let me go back. We're like, okay, well, there's 2 days with inventory sitting here, there's 3 days sitting here, there's 2 days in there, and then you gotta go back. Like this, okay, where is this at? What's dictating you? What production schedule are you going off of? Okay, then we go back. And then ultimately, we end up with customers saying, okay, we want to get more in line with where you're at. Let's get back to where we're at. You know, we'll get your comfort level. We'll make sure you never run out, but let's help us help you type thing. So flipping over to my Jidoka, or automation with a human touch, let's break that down a little further so you can understand what that means. I don't know where I got my animation, but this guy's here. Again, the tool of built-in quality, or the automation of human touch, the ability of a process to be stopped when such problems as equipment malfunctions, quality problems, or work begin being late. The ability of the process to be stopped at the particular point. This is either by machines, they have inspection processes, a machine can stop you, or by employees that can sense the abnormalities in the process. Okay? We'll continue to talk about that a little more. So the benefits of the automation with human touch is defects are not passed on to the next process, the patient, the customer. It doesn't go on. Because again, if you allow it to go on, then you add in that secondary and third step of process and inspection, and your costs go outside of the roof, right? Equipment breakdown is prevented because problems and their causes become immediately apparent. So if I have the ability to detect a problem, this lid is not on there. Stop, right? And then we fix it at that point. It's not go forward and you got all that inventory, you got all these discussions, and you got to get rid of it, and you're backtracking and time is delayed. Problems and opportunities for improvement are made visible. Again, if you're stopping, stop, call, wait concept. If you stop, call somebody, and you wait for something to happen, you're inspecting at that point, and we're not passing on the defects, we're passing on the problems. So going forward, I know I've shown, again, this is my 1 week's worth of training in about 47 and a half minutes. Going forward, what do we do? So taking the initiative, and if you can't see it, this is the bull by the horns concept. Taking the initiative. A lean enterprise can't afford to have people waiting to be told what to do. We go back to what I talked about before. Assign a sensei, assign a change agent, right? You empower somebody to take that lead. Small improvements, small items. You're in charge. You give me the updates. Listen, we'll give you the training, and here's your resources, type stuff. You know, we're going to move forward, and we're going to begin by setting the goals. And we'll go over this again. Setting the goals, developing plans to achieve the goals, measuring progress against the plan. Again, it may be, this is very inefficient. This is the wrong location. I know it's there. You've got to move around all these different chairs. This may be the one you start with. Right, we need to move it over there. It makes more sense. It's closer to the podium. There's less walking. Right, those type of ideas. Maximizing personal productivity for each individual, and then managing time and being organized. If I've learned anything over the years in automotive, I'm sure it's the speed of which things have to happen. Once you identify something, you have to move forward, because it's not because you've done a bad job and we want to really punish you. It's because there's an opportunity. We can close this down. We're not really expending more costs out. So the quicker we get it done, the better we move forward. Now, I'll give my another lessons learned, and I don't like to say that I learned. Okay. In my environment, we identified a flow issue of how product was moving into our cells. The cell was set up in a U-shaped area. What we identified was the product, as it moved through, people were overstepping each other or waiting because you had to go this way, and the product flow wasn't moving right. So, in my infinite wisdom, got all these people together, and we mapped it all out, and I'm a big drawer. I draw stuff, and you see this, and crisscross, and this, and that. What we need to do is we need to set it up in an L shape. Identify why, here's the product flow, the L shape, raw material in, finished goods out. It should help the process. Again, third eye guy, everybody's staring at me like, okay. So, emphasize the being organized and managing time. I said, today's Wednesday, how about Friday we have this ready to go? Okay? Still staring at the three-eyed guy. Believe me, it's going to work. It's going to make everything easier. We went through this, and Thursday they had it done. Great. I wasn't prepared for all the behavioral issues that we're going to have with clients. Not my background, right? I was just go, got to do it, we cut it out, we're not going to have those issues, people aren't going to be dropping stuff. So we had to back up. I didn't punt. I had to back up. Like a 25-yard penalty. I had to back all the way up, and we had to step through it because this is where the development side of people and their behaviors, how we have to help explain. We went through and explained what was going to happen, but we weren't prepared for, I used to stare at her, now I'm staring at her. I didn't go through that enough, right? So I had to learn. And I explained to people, thank you for letting me fail on my own, because I wouldn't know, but I would appreciate somebody would have said something. But again, the point of that is that there are different ways of doing it. ARC had always done it that way. They've always done U-shaped cells, and it's always worked that way, and it's been there for 15 plus years. The crazy guy from automotive industry had these different ideas. I had to go through from both sides. So we had to go through more focus group training aspects, and we, instead of get it all done, we went, okay, get it all done, and get it all done, and get it all done. So we've now got 50% of it converted over to L-shape. We have two U-shaped cells left, but again, I learned the hard way. But the point of it is that if we don't push change, no one's ever going to change. Because if I would have said, who wants to do this? Everybody would have said, there's not going to be a hand raised, right? But I had to show the benefit, but then now we have to show the other sides of it on how we get through the behavioral aspects and set people up, you know, to be successful. Disabled or not, you can teach lean. Period. Doesn't matter. If you can teach somebody how to do something, I don't care if disabled or not, you can teach them how to do lean. We've got it, right? We're not experts, but we're students. We're moving through. So innovating, a lean enterprise, we're relying on creativity to people and as never before. Again, creativity. Analyzing the problems. Applying critical thinking process. Developing creative responses to new demands. Again, if I go back to what I talked about, we organize the place first. It's 5S. If you don't know 5S, it's all the systems of everything has a place and there's a place for everything. We had to teach that. We've got a lot of lines now. We've got a lot of organizations. We've got where things belong because you got to get it organized in order to see what the waste opportunities are. Because if it's all shoved in one area, you don't see it. But if you got it in lanes and if it's labeled, then you say, well, we've got excess material. If you go back to my discussion about the dump table with the grind, I saw real quick where we had a problem. It was a safety issue, but then we also had an inventory problem because we weren't even grinding what we should have been grinding on a daily basis. We didn't have the capabilities. So lastly, the different groups we talked about and how we move forward, you know, in the process, how to relate to the overall operation. The intercompany teams, the customers, suppliers, competitors. It's okay to look at your competitors, it really is, because you can learn some things and you can also share. We actually go to our customers and went through this type of training with them because they're not aware, because it ultimately helps us. The project teams address specific issues, and then self-directed work teams manage the day-to-day operations. Again, pick your change agent, identify who your sensei is, who's going to be the leader, someone they can ask questions to as we move forward. That's all I have for today. I hope I didn't rush it too much, but I wanted to put it in perspective that you can relate to. Anybody have any questions?
Jason, one thing is, once you have a histogram of making product, you can figure out inventory and control.
Yeah.
But if you're going into a whole new venture, how would you advise to start that?
So you're talking about a new opportunity with a company? Yeah. So we actually go through that now. When we have our new job meetings, we actually do a simulation to the best of our ability. We bring that in and we identify not only in the process of how to put it together, but then we identify outside of it. How do we get that product in? Where's the best place for it? So we can identify those potential waste opportunities in the front end. What we found is that our traditional quoting process, what we have a calculation, you put it in, this fits down number. Sounds great. You got to take that and put it in a manufacturing environment. How many changeovers does it take, right? How many times, changeover means how many times do you have to change over to get that new product? It sounds great, everybody can do that, but that changeover typically is a 5 to 30 minute window of no productivity, nothing to be made. So we actually look at all that. So we step it out, okay, if I had all this here and it takes 10 people, how do I get everything to them, okay? Then we look at the safety, right? If we're looking at safety, okay, how's it being lifted? How's it go here? How do we move it out, right? Well, the idea, well, we can put it in next to this process. Well, what's the flow pattern for the forklift going in there for the current process, okay? If you're saying you want 5 more turns in there, what does that mean, right? So you have to take it outside of the calculation and take it to your manufacturing people and say, I know you can show me how to put it together, but show me how you do it in your process. Show me all the other things. And that's what we're breaking all those down, you know, from that. Any other questions? Yes?
No, I'm, do you think it took you to feel, for you to start to feel like your culture was changing and people were buying into it? Or maybe the better question is, how long did it take for you to lose your eye?
I still have my eye. But it's a 12 to 18 month building that foundation.
Building that, okay.
Yeah, to think you're going to go in and change it, it's going to be ready next week. It's not going to happen, right? You're going to be able to get small wins, and then you'll get some kickbacks and you push through. You've got to keep moving through. But don't tackle the whole entire thing at once. Look at your operations and look at your value and say, okay, I'm losing $10,000 a year on this particular job. It's a great community effort. We got it going, and it's a great relationship for us. It's good work for our clients. But break that down. That should spike up for you. Break that one down. But I just passed my 18th month with the company, and I truly feel we have a foundation built.
Yeah.
Right? When I got there, it was old manufacturing practices that worked. It was an environment that created somewhat of an unsafe situation. But we focused, again, start with an organization, lay it out, what's it supposed to look like. You got 5S, put in 5. Don't, you know, go with something that organization, what's it supposed to look like. And you'll see real quick where the issues are. Because all this inventory can be sitting there. Or you're going to see a bunch of people sitting and waiting, and you're going to see that right away. And say, okay, if I got a bunch of people waiting, go look at the numbers. Okay? Finance, run me the numbers on this for the last, you know, 18 months. And you'll say, wow, I can see why, you know? And like in that case, maybe a changeover situation where they're going from job to job and everybody's waiting. Spend 2 hours a day waiting. Doesn't matter. But it's, you got to go through the steps. You got to take through the education. People are going to look at you like you're crazy. What they don't want to change, everybody hates change, but as they go through it, it's amazing to me that I've been able to teach some of these methods, and now we have it to the point where we have teams with people with disabilities that are looking to think ahead. Now, I didn't mention a few other, but there's some other things, lift tables and rollers they put in. This is stuff that's probably laying around the plant that's not being used to the fullest, so they just made them repurpose it.
To deal with the issue that
It is, but then I said, you got to look at your own situation, right? I'm not saying everybody can do multitask jobs and all this, right? But you have to look at your situation. In our particular purpose elements that we looked at, we weren't able to just go piece by piece based on customer. But we've been able to minimize that inventory that was sitting in the process to make it more efficient, to have better quality, right? To get the job done on time, right? You set up your process from that. Then you continue to go into, can we get the one-to-one? It may not ever work for us in all of our things, but we've been incorporated that in some of the others. But the idea is that he starts, I start, he starts, blue, black, and gray is all mixed in. I can do either one. Whatever's pace. He may have the first step put on the bolt. I've got the one put on the nut. She's got the one put in the box. That's the idea. Blue, black, gray, almost through. I mean, here's the customer down there waiting. That's the idea. So there's maybe I'm building gray, he's building blue, and then here comes a material handling person. Yeah, I need blues and grays, and I'm walking all the way over here, and then I'm setting it back up, and I got to rebuy. Oh, and here you go, customer. That's the waste opportunity. So in that case, it may be still that we're all building the same thing, and we're all building blue today, but the process, you look at the flow. How's it going through? That's what I'm talking about, laying out the process, the L to U concept, is looking where that waste was that you can start with early. So there's not a silver bullet. You're going to try it. You're going to fail on some of the things. U to L. You have to back up, and then try it again. And keep the people that are involved, especially your change agent and you identify it as a sensei, keep them involved and engaged so that they're really promoting this moving through because it works. Now, even to the point of we put in a nice walkway in our manufacturing environment because before we didn't have those. It was a waste of a lot of different things because safety was the first thing. It's kind of like a Frogger game sometimes, you know. A lot of things moving and everybody's just trying to bob and weave. But the problem was the forklift was waiting more often than not for people to cross. Forklift is tied directly to the piece that we're making for the customer, which is directly tied to the piece price, that's the dollars. So if that forklift is stopping, that's those people waiting. See, that's where we map that out, right? So first everybody thought, well, he just wants a walkway. No, walkway is great. I want people safe, but it also incorporates, how do we keep the process moving? So different things like that. All right, good.
Is the goal ultimately, because you keep talking about having a guru or someone who is constantly looking at this stuff, is the ultimate cultural goal to have everyone
everyone on the bench, no matter where they are, focusing on this? And
that's the idea. The question was, I talk about a sensei or a guru, is the goal to have everybody involved and engaged in looking at this? Yes, it is. Because as the economy changes and it does this, it's not a very stable environment. So you got to constantly look at ways to improve and reduce costs, even to the point of how the janitor moves through the plant. You know, what is that he or she doing? You know, how long does it take? Is it truly a 40-hour week job? I mean, those are things we're even looking at now. You know, how do we make their process a little more streamlined? And you can incorporate adding additional jobs. The sensei is someone that is engaged in the process, understands what we went through here, that can really keep driving that change agent or the project lead that you identify.
Out of curiosity, do you pay piece rate or an hourly rate to your clients?
Piece rate to our clients.
When I just see this whole, every process change, new time studies, which I'm sure is why it's a 12 to 18 month process.
Yeah.
You know, but I see all the logistics of really making that work. It's
exciting.
Yeah,
it's a lot, but again, just be careful, don't buy off too much, you know, because you won't be able to keep up, and you'll feel discouraged, and it just never takes off. And then everybody works for you, it's like, here's another 30 days of the month, you know, good idea, and never goes anywhere. That's the idea. But yeah.
I think your point was well taken, identifying the biggest potential loss areas and attacking that one, you know, just focusing on one thing at a time. But
yeah, I started with, we cleaned up the place, we got it all organized, we got it taped. And then we went after that grind area because safety was really what drove us in. And real quick, we can see opportunities for on the value side, and was able to, as a teaching tool. You know, again, 4x2x4s and a 4x8 sheet of plywood, and we doubled our production capabilities with using unpurposed equipment that was in the building. It was just education aspect of that. Okay? That's all I have.
Thank you. Well, I thought maybe he was going to help us find more time at the end of our day, but I think what I've discovered is for the first 2 years, I'm going to have less time in every day. But wow, that's powerful information. Thanks, Jason, for sharing. We're going to transition now and ask for Christian and Aaron to give us an update on what's happening, what's new in the world of state use. So with that, I don't see Christian in the room. So are you up? Oh, there you go, Christian. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for coming, everyone. Is this working? Yeah, it's just Aaron and I presenting today. Wes is on vacation. I think he planned it on purpose. As a matter of fact, I know he did. But I do want to give you an update of what's going on and what's to come. First things first, welcome to Tracy Lane. She's the latest, newest member of our staff. She's going to be focusing on product development. As I've said in the past, we've looked into product development, but everyone's so busy, we spend 5 minutes at a time. So one of Tracy's primary responsibilities will be doing product research and development. She'll also be doing order processing and troubleshooting issues as they come through. And then she'll also be the GMIS person, which means she'll be monitoring every single purchase that is made by the state of Indiana. And if anything comes through that looks like it's something that we provide, she will do what it takes to make sure that it goes to us instead of to another party. So there she is in the back, wave. Okay. We're very, very thrilled to have her. Okay, I do have preliminary year-end figures for us. We came in at $9.6 million. It's a little different than it's been in the past because products are at 34% instead of 30%. So we're seeing an increase in products, primarily in the highway safety area. Last year's total was $8.8 million, so this represents a 9.2% increase year over year. So we're very pleased with how this year has gone. As far as wages go, the wages were about $1.6 million. The average hourly wage for services was $7.02 and for products $3.04. The total average hourly wage for individuals with disabilities was $5.03 an hour, which is slightly higher than it was last year. We're seeing an average number of people employed through the state use program at 342 people a month. These don't match up because these are averages, so they're rounded numbers, but 210 in services and 133 in production. This has stayed consistent year over year, but again, products have increased in the number of people and services have decreased slightly. Okay, as far as renewals go, Blue River Services with mesh high-vis caps, safety vests from Michiana, and toner cartridges from Hopewell. We had a whole slew of products go through on our last provider meeting. This time it's been all about services. And there has been a ton. I'll just let you read those. The big highlights are we have a new contract with Red Oak for Connersville BMV and 13 BMV branches with SIRS. Bureau of Motor Vehicles has decided to, wherever possible, break up the state into chunks, and SIRS was able to secure 13 of those in southern Indiana. We have a ton of stuff in process as well. On the product side, we have, we have a ton. I'll just let you go through them. The biggest one is all 19 rest areas right now. The figures have gone through and have been approved. We're waiting on the contract process, and those will happen shortly. Okay, rest area news. A couple of things. This RFP has gone through. There have been interested parties that have reviewed the RFP. Our language was used in the RFP, meaning that there will all the janitorial and groundskeeping services will be provided by state use providers, qualified work centers. The awardee will be taking over the contracts when they start at their current rate, so there will not be a renegotiation once the RFP starts. If there's a the awardee will not be changing or negotiating. They'll be keeping on with exactly what you've already worked through. Also, our language said that the awardee must continue to use state use agencies and that they must follow the state use law, which means looking at pricing, looking at how it's set up. They have to continue to do it the way that NDOT has done it for so many years. So that was a very big win for us. We did meet with prospective bidders. We bought them lunch and had some really good conversations. Since then, we've had a couple more meetings with a bidder that we think has a very good chance of getting the contract. Those have been very productive. We have been talking to them about adding other services like light maintenance or repair services, and we're going to be contacting all of the state use provider agencies that have rest area contracts to see what their capabilities are and what their interest is in taking on, and then those can potentially be added to the contracts and offer more employment opportunities to people with disabilities. We are anticipating that we'll have a decision maybe in September because the RFP is due in early August. So we'll just keep watching it and we'll keep informing you as things develop. I did want to touch on the Department of Justice. There has been some increased scrutiny on state use programs through the sheltered work aspect of it. Basically what they're doing is they're cracking down on ADA and Olmstead. And Olmstead basically says that individuals must be served in the least restrictive setting that is appropriate to their needs and their choice. In the two biggest ones that have really kind of rolled down recently took place in Oregon and in Rhode Island. In Oregon, there was a class action lawsuit because people were not being given the choice of going into supported employment or community-based employment. Instead, they were over-dependent upon the sheltered workshop as what happens after high school. And as a result, Oregon has shut the front door on sheltered work or facility-based employment and are phasing that out over time. In Rhode Island, the issue centered around the transition process itself, where schools were using sheltered work as part of their curriculum, their school curriculum, and then transitioning directly into sheltered environments. Again, this eliminates choice and it emphasizes the facility over the community-based employment. So they are making some changes. They're continuing to do shelter-based employment, but they are making some significant changes. The important thing to note, though, that these things are not against sheltered work or facility-based employment in general. It's against not following the ADA and not allowing people choice. So I did want to just throw out a few things and what you make sure that you work very, very closely with your supported employment. We're about employment for people with disabilities according to their abilities and their choice, which means facility-based and community-based, but make sure you work closely with them and that you keep all options on the table. Also, basically, if you follow CARF standards, you're going to be fine. Make sure that you document quarterly as part of the ISP process, that there are opportunities for community-based employment. Make sure that you go over their productivity. Make sure that you document the reasons and their choices along the way. And then, of course, make sure that you look at your time studies and make sure those are up to date. Other stuff I wanted to just kind of make you aware of. We're making some changes really in the way the State Use Committee functions. Before, basically, what we would do in the State Use Committee is I'd have two reports, each about 3 pages long, and I would read line by line those reports. And then there would be an approval process. But we have some very, very important people on the State Use Committee, and they're very interested in doing more. So at the last State Use Committee, we decided to change it up a little bit, engage the members, and they had a lot of ideas. One of the big changes is they want to start having the State Use Committee meetings at work centers so they can see the people in process and understand what's going on. So that's happening, and the first one's going to be at BOSMA next month. So we're really excited about seeing that happen and real excited about working with the State Use Committee to expand services and look at things we haven't looked at before. Another thing I wanted to tell you about is that we finally have our capability inventory database together. All of you that submitted capability inventories a couple months ago, thank you very much. Those are now in the system, so we'll be able to very quickly, as opportunities arise, as we identify new products, new services out there, we'll be able to use those, go into our database, and find out exactly who has the capacity to do it, who has the revenue to do it. So it won't be a matter of calling person after person after person to find the right match. We'll be able to look at the matches and go that way. Additionally, we are revamping our website. We have NARF and Smart Partners Alliance has invested in WebLink, which will completely redo the way that we work internally, but also it'll add a lot of value to the State Use Catalog and the way that's set up. One of the key features is that it has a shopping cart option. So whereas before, state employees, when they purchased, would have to fax or call in or use their internal system, they'll be able to place an order directly on our system, check it out, it'll go directly to us. So that should speed up the process significantly.
Automatically come to the vendor, to us?
We'll send it to the vendor, but it'll set up as an invoice, so we'll have it instead of, right now the process is either a call-in or a fax, something like this, and I think it's really hinders state employees because it's a pain in the butt to order from us, basically, right now. This will, if it's on a QPA, then they can do it from inside their system and it's fast. If it's someone who's interested in our products and wants to give it a try, they can look it up on the website, but then they have to call or fax or do it another way. This way allows them to make the purchase immediately, let us know, invoice, we can let you know immediately and do it that way. So we're hoping that that's going to, you know, you want to make it as easy for the customer as possible. So we're real excited about that. We've also finally begun having meetings with some higher level officials. We've met with the Secretary of State and with the Commissioner of the Department of Administration. We're targeting higher folks. For so long we've been just working with NDOT and IDOA. We're really trying to expand that into other areas of the state. And the Secretary of State's office was very welcoming, had some ideas for us that we're looking into. But we're going to continue that trend and try to do a top-down approach as well as working with the people that we always work with. And that is all I have as far as an update. Any questions for me? Okay, Aaron, you're up.
slides. I just wanted to give a brief update kind of about our marketing and sales strategy that we implemented. And, you know, at the beginning of the year, we sat down to kind of strategize on how do we get face-to-face with our customers, with local decision makers, purchasers. How do we do that? So it's a two-pronged approach. First prong was obviously identifying those markets and audiences that we want to get face-to-face. And then seeing what the opportunities are to speak with them. And so we identified 8 exhibits that we exhibit at through this year. We've already been through 4 of them. We have the Indiana Sheriff's Association Conference tomorrow. That's going to be on the east side. It's going to be we went last year. It was a great opportunity to sell the state use program. It's actually kind of funny that last year when we exhibited, we were right next to a vendor who had like assault rifles and handguns, so it was really hard to actually talk to guys about the state use program when there's assault rifles right next to you.
Wear a safety vest.
Yeah, exactly. So hopefully this year will be different. We have this exhibit. So with each exhibit, we get to speak with face-to-face with these local decision purchasing personnel. Another advantage of going to these exhibits is that we get an email list of each attendee at that conference. So at the IASBO conference, we not only got an email list of all the attendees, but pretty much everyone in their association, so all the school business officials in the state of Indiana. Our reasoning gathering those email lists is the second prong, is that we wanted to, after we made these face-to-face connections, we wanted to follow up and strengthen that relationship that we tapped onto. And we do this by sending out these targeted email marketing communications to all these buyers. It's kind of an efficient way for us to sell the state use program, reinforce it, and so that there's that brand awareness throughout the year. These targeted email communications, we're going to send out 6 this year. We've already sent out 2 so far. As you can see, in April, we sent it to 2,041 buyers in the state of Indiana. And this list is kind of an all-comprehensive list. There's Association of Indian Counties, Department of Administration personnel, Department of Transportation personnel, Indiana Association of School Business Officials. It's just a whole hodgepodge of buyers. And then we sent another one on June 12th to 2794 buyers. So with each exhibit, we're getting more and more contacts, and so we get to sell the program more and more. So we're going to send 4 more throughout the year, and as you can see from the sample, this is our first one that we sent out. It is just a highlight of all of our products and services we offer, and then it directs them back to our state use program catalog. So that's just a quick update on our marketing and sales efforts. Last thing I had was we have the annual report that we just closed out our fiscal year, so the state use program is starting their annual report. I sent out an email reminder to all the work center contacts about, you know, just sending us our your success stories and photos so that we can include in the annual report. We're hopefully to get that out by September, I believe. So just a quick reminder for you guys. That's all I have for you.
Is it possible for us to be included in that email blitz, or is there a reason that shouldn't happen?
Oh, no, that's fine.
It'd be great if his team could get a copy of that email marketing blitz that's going out.
Yeah, I can do that. Any more questions?
Questions, Doc? Anything? Good. This is easy. Thank you very much. We need 5 minutes before lunch is ready, I'm seeing. From Barb's waving in the back.
Okay, well then, before lunch is ready, if you want to take a quick restroom break, we're going to try to expedite lunch today because we have a panel this afternoon and still a fairly large tour of the facility that we want to try to squeeze in. So we'll take 5-10 minute break, then grab lunch.
Yeah, the restrooms are to the left here and on the right-hand wall. It's kind of a zigzag, and then I can both in there.
Perfect, thank you. All right.
Cool.
work? All right, so I'm going to talk to our other co-chairs here about the remainder of the afternoon, but it looks like, I don't know how much time. Did you give them a time allocation, speak 5-10 minutes or prepare?
No, I kind of made mine the one that kind of stretched whatever.
But I mean these folks. Did you give them a guideline as far as how long they should be prepared to speak?
No, I didn't.
Hi! Hi. Good to see you.
3.5 hours later.
Oh, it's all right. How are you?
Good.
Well, you have the longest to go, so that's fair.
Hey, come on up. Yes. Oh, I'm glad we have all of our co-chairs.
Same place, same time. How are you
doing? I'm the other one on the emails.
I need to sneak out early today.
What time are you leaving? We're just talking about how to recraft the meeting so we can try to engage everybody.
Actually, I get to be back by about 1:30, so I'm fairly
okay. So can you introduce the panelists? Can you do that for us?
Sure.
So, because that's we're going to do that right after lunch, so I'm thinking probably maybe 5 till 12, something like that.
Sure.
If you'll just introduce these folks, we don't have any bios on them, but you can tell where they're from.
And I can catch me a little bit over.
Yeah, that'd be perfect.
Quick question. Have I given you guys what you need in the States?
Oh, you mean what
are
you here yet? That's good.
Okay.
Your report?
Because I don't mind mixing it up any which way.
I don't know if you were here or not here. I didn't get to see when you came in.
Yeah, your report was really good. Okay. I felt it was thorough, concise. And, yeah. It was good. It hit the right points. And a lot of activity with that was
I think it helps folks know and discover what's going on. I feel like
actually my impression was you accomplished more than previous.
And you're telling us about it.
So,
I just want to make sure I'm hitting it.
No, it's good. It's good to hear the different departments you're getting in that. You're reaching out beyond the traditional ones, because there's IH, the Indiana Department of Administration was the primary, and it seemed the only one. And so it's nice to see that you're outreach and you're getting.
There's some weird stuff. Tracy is researching microfiche.
Yeah.
Because there is a
scanning.
Well, no, not just old-fashioned 1960s. Because there's a state law on the books that says the Secretary of State must have their official representative.
Really?
Even though they have a modern scanning system and they have everything digital and everything, they still have to do it and they don't know it. So we are researching 1960s technology.
Wow. Good title.
Put
our hat on.
What is this next session agenda? So he's going to introduce the panel, then they'll get started, then he's going to scoot his way out of here. Yeah, that's all right. He's going to sneak.
We got these new balls that are blowing up their bottoms. I got them. They're blowing them up and give them the prize, and hopefully we can get them all. Soccer balls, footballs, basketball.
Nice.
Oh, that's good.
Julie, she was, well, I'm going to leave because Richard's going to talk about balls. I said, Julie, you can't get away with the CEO. It's all ball. But we are, so that's what I got to get back to Andy. Andy Herman, not Andy.
So after he introduces the panelists, we'll kind of scream, they'll talk, and then hopefully they'll address a lot of the talking point questions. And if not, Helen, you and I have a list of the questions. Yeah, we'll make sure that we kind of feed them some things and ask the group to engage. But then after that, Helen, if you'll conduct maybe the setting the next agenda, what do you want us to get from that? How do you want us to guide that?
We had that list last year. We pretty much worked through it.
Okay.
So
what's important to you? What do you
Are you getting what you need from these meetings? Okay. Any changes you'd like to see in these meetings? What sort of presentations would you be interested in?
As we're planning for 14.
I always love the bullying that guy. I could never. The guys.
It's that, I think, comment about, I had just walked in, about try to make as many jobs as possible, so you break it up more into instead of lane, but the whole,
Well, it's kind of counterintuitive.
Yeah. And I think the reality is, as we seek for more work, though, I know our problem with the last few years is that we're getting close to a capacity issue. So if we were leaner, it wouldn't be an issue. So, you know, I think that's kind of a sales, it's a sales of production kind of thing.
What I was thinking is, I remember Cherry Services, doesn't one of your colleagues, it's just a long job, require a certain amount of inventory?
Yeah.
So, you know, where there has to be a million or 10,000 units or something in inventory at all times. That's got to be expensive.
As long as it's true, and for us, we have 90 days. As long as it's 90 days. Because sometimes we get 120, sometimes we get 180. I think his point's very well taken. Interesting. All right, so guide that section. And then if you'll just introduce Tom. Tom said he's going to guide the tour. And we hope to be at that about 1:30. Tom's last name. It's horrible. I know.
I just
B-O-Y-D.
That's good. I know Tom, but I don't know his last name.
And there's really two tours you can do. One is through the work. So I'll kind of nudge him and let him know that, you know, we have people with 3 hour drives.
All right, so how can we set up up here for the panel?
I was thinking these two tables.
Okay.
You can just move them there.
The front. All right.
So you want to go back?
I will.
Oh, we're not allowed to move the podium.
Oh, okay.
That was my first thought, and then I went, nope.